rise. Foyer, foyer, foyer. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Peach, who is appearing remotely, and Judge Laurer, who is here in the courtroom. And we're here today for the matter of Emilio Estevez versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 20-8637. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Attorney Kent Eiler, together with Attorney John Niles of Carpenter Chartered, appearing for the appellant, Mr. Emilio Estevez.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Eiler.
Tim Joseph and Carolyn Washington, appearing for the Secretary, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph. And I understand that Ms. Washington is second chair.
Yes.
Okay, great. Each party will have 30 minutes to present arguments. Mr. Eiler, I understand you want to reserve 5 minutes of your time?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, that's fine. And you may go ahead, Mr. Eiler, when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This case involves separate issues of law pertaining to Mr. Estevez's entitlement to service-connected compensation of his left knee condition, his right shoulder condition, and his skin condition. I plan to address each of the separate legal issues that arise with respect to each condition by beginning with the left knee condition and the issues of law surrounding it, followed by the right shoulder condition, and then concluding by addressing Mr. Estevez's skin condition and the attendant legal issues there. With respect to Mr. Estevez's entitlement to service connection of his left knee condition, this court is asked to reconcile, once again, the VA's concurrent duties to both maximize the benefits a veteran receives under the law with its duty to avoid compensating a veteran more than once for the same manifestation of a condition. These concurrent duties are not in tension, but they do require the VA to understand what is required of it under its duty to maximize benefits for our nation's veterans. To both avoid compensating a veteran more than once for the same manifestation of a condition and to maximize that same veteran's benefits, the VA must, once the veteran has demonstrated they've met the minimum criteria of a particular diagnostic code, turn to whether the veteran, having now done so, has any additional manifestation of symptoms which remain uncompensated. If they do, the process begins anew with the agency seeking to maximize the veteran's benefits once the minimum diagnostic code criteria has been met. To that end, Mr. Estevez asked this court to clarify that when separate diagnostic codes require pain, a duty to maximize prevents the secretary from simply ending the analysis by finding the claimant has pain. Instead,
Let me interrupt you there. I want to get something clear. Now, the board awarded an increased evaluation to 20% prior to May 2013 for the left knee. And it was a little confusing. They didn't actually say what diagnostic code they were using for that increase. Page 6 of the record, they actually mentioned 5259, and which doesn't have a 20% level. So can you clarify for me what DC was used for that increase prior to? Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. The diagnostic code that the VA currently is compensating Mr. Estevez for his left knee condition is solely 5258. At the 20% rating.
for both periods. He has a 20% prior to 513 under 5258.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
It was a,
okay.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Estevez is asking this court to clarify that when separate diagnostic codes require pain, it's the secretary's duty to maximize prevents the secretary from ending the analysis there. Instead, the secretary has to consider the kind of pain each diagnostic code requires. Both the two diagnostic codes at issue here, 5261 and 5258, both require pain, but the manifestation of that pain is different. The court should reject the secretary's repeated position that pain is pain, with ratings precluded by 38 CFR 4.14. The court should reject that position because the schedule of ratings disabilities distinguishes between different kinds of pain. Here, the record demonstrated that Mr. Estevez experiences both pain on motion and pain other than on motion, which pain is different, and that difference is significant because it then in turn both allows and by extension requires the secretary to leave over the non-overlapping other pain to satisfy the second diagnostic code criteria.
Because now, Mr. Eiler, you say that in other situations, VA distinguishes between the kinds of pain. I think were the words you used. What are you referring to?
We cite some examples, Your Honor, I believe, in our briefing. Off the top of my head, we would note that Diagnostic Code 5276, acquired flatfoot condition, specifies that compensation is warranted there based upon pain on manipulation and use. There are several cardiovascular conditions that we reference in our briefing that the court will find that indicate that there is limb pain at rest. So there are several examples we would submit, Your Honor, throughout the schedule.
But in DC 5258, is there any distinguishing between the kinds of pain mentioned in that DC?
I would submit, Your Honor, it pain is one of the manifestations of the meniscal condition that warrants compensation under 5258. Looking at it, locking pain and effusion into the joint is required for compensation under 5258. But what we would submit is obviously the manifestation of Mr. Estevez's knee symptoms are not just limited to the pain that he experiences in the knee under 5258, because he also has limitation of extension of that knee, which he experiences pain when he attempts to extend the knee, and that's limited to 10 degrees. So the minimum relevant symptomatology for a compensable rating in connection with 5261 in tandem with 38 CFR 4.59 is Mr. Estevez's pain on motion since at least October 2019, limitation of extension to 10 degrees, and the minimum relevant symptomatology for a 20% rating under Diagnostic Code 5258 is his pain other than on motion. The duty to maximize required the secretary here to evaluate the rule against pyramiding in light of these minimum thresholds. Moreover, the schedule's use of the different terms, pain with respect to 5258 versus the painful motion that accompanies Diagnostic Code 5261, shows the secretary's intent to distinguish between pain on motion and pain that occurs other than on motion. That different meanings for different types of pain are at play here is illustrated by the fact that Diagnostic Code 5261 supplies ratings criteria for the disability of limited knee extension, which is a kind of motion, while Diagnostic Code 5258 supplies rating criteria for a meniscal disability, which is not a kind of motion. The board's errors here were prejudicial.
Counselor, Counselor, this is Judge Peach. May I ask you a question? Is the appellate compensated under 5261?
No, Your Honor. No. Presently, the appellant is not, and we would submit that the findings for the board to compensate the veteran under 5261 were based upon factual findings in the record that the board had already made.
And Mr. Estevez, does he have an extension limitation at all?
Yes, Your Honor. He is a October 2019 VA examination showed that his knee was limited in extension to 10 degrees. That's
and
a page.
So why would you not want to argue that Mr. Estevez is entitled to a compensation under 5261 for his extension limitation of 10%?
Well, we maintain, Your Honor, that he is entitled to both. Whereas the board found that the knee condition, he was only entitled to the 20% rating under 5258. Mr. Estevez is alleging that was error, precisely because, as Your Honor suggests, he was also entitled to a rating of at least 10% under 5261 in addition to the rating that he received under 5258. And that has been the case at least since the October 2019 VA examination, where the board noted that he had experienced that limitation in extension and motion. And we would submit that in this case, the appropriate remedy for the court would be to reverse the board's denial of separate rating evaluations under both diagnostic codes and instruct the board to assign and combine the 20% evaluation under diagnostic code 5258 and a 10% evaluation under diagnostic code 5261. That is the relief that Mr. Estevez seeks. We would submit
that Mr. Eiler, you're asking us to read into diagnostic code 5258 pain. And then, of course, pain is in there, but you would add the words. You're saying that the words implicitly, there are additional words in there other than when in motion. You're asking us to read that into the diagnostic code?
Well, would that
only be in Mr. Estevez's case, or would that be in all veterans' cases, or could the diagnostic code change depending on what veteran is being evaluated and that veteran's circumstances?
I think, Your Honor, Mr. Estevez is not asking this court to read any language into 5258 that is not present there currently. We would submit it is the secretary that is asking this court to read language, namely the word all, into 5258 before pain, all pain manifested by the knee, which language we would submit is not there.
But normally if like just looking at this grammatically, like if you have a noun, let's say, like pain, if you add a modifier like on motion, I mean, wouldn't that be a subset of the general term, a modifier for the general term pain?
You wouldn't have
to read anything into the word pain. It's just that there's a modifier when you're talking about pain on motion.
Correct, Your Honor, but we would also submit that modifier isn't there. So it really goes to the question of whether the manifestation of the symptoms of Mr. Estevez's knee condition are improperly being compensated more than once, right? Because that's what the rule against pyramiding, of course, is designed to prevent. And so we would submit that since these are, since it's a minimum, because obviously, Your Honor, you know, there will be those veterans who would be entitled to a compensable rating under 5258 who don't experience pain upon extension and wouldn't meet the criteria because they don't experience pain on motion. Maybe it's just pain not on motion, or more common, a veteran doesn't experience pain when they are not in motion, but they only experience pain when they attempt to, say, extend the knee. And under those different hypotheticals, a veteran is only going to be entitled to compensation under one diagnostic code or the other. However, in Mr. Estevez's case, what we're arguing is that by giving the secretary's still it's his duty to maximize Mr. Estevez's benefits, he has to look to see that these are minimum rating criteria. And as soon as that minimum rating criteria is met, then the analysis goes to the question of what additional pain, additional manifestations of symptoms does he need to be compensated for.
Mr. Eiler?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
With respect to the rule against pyramiding, in your opinion, can the court even review whether pyramiding occurred here if the board did not make a finding one way or the other regarding pyramiding?
In other words, we
don't have the case that we had in Wallerman or Lyles here where there was a specific finding. But in your opinion, can the court review that in the absence?
We would submit, Your Honor, that the finding effectively was made by the board, because the board evaluated whether or not there was a rating in addition to 20% and ultimately determined by only examining it independently under each diagnostic code, said no, he doesn't meet the 30% criteria under any of these. So we would submit that that did occur, and that Wallerman is essentially akin to the situation here, because the board did not grant a rating to Mr. Estevez in excess of 20%. Turning next to Mr. Estevez's right shoulder condition.
Mr. Eiler, I still have a question on the knee, if you don't mind. You indicated that under 5261, he's getting compensation under 5261, but yet he has an extension of, limited to 10%. And is it your understanding that 5261, those extensions have to be accompanied by payments?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm having a little bit of difficulty with your audio. But I understood your question to be, is pain necessary for a rating under 5261? Is that correct?
Yes.
No. And we'd submit, Your Honor, that, I mean, again, it's in terms of what the actual language, right, of the diagnostic code, what's required there. You'll note that pain is not included. Typically, I mean, painful motion is assessed under 4.59 in terms of the limitation of motion and painful motion, but it is not exclusively included in the language of 5261, to Your Honor's point.
Thank you.
Mr. Estevez also appeals the board's failure to grant him a rating higher than 20% for his shoulder condition. In doing so, the board correctly noted the internal rotation of Mr. Estevez's right shoulder was limited to 55 degrees, but found a higher 30% rating unwarranted. Mr. Estevez asked this court to hold that the degree of limitation thresholds for the version of Diagnostic Code 5201 at issue during the pendency of this appeal applies to all four kinds of shoulder motion, whereas the secretary asked this court to hold the degree of limitation thresholds apply only to two kinds of shoulder motion, flexion and abduction. For external rotation and internal rotation, the secretary argues the thresholds essentially have in terms of the degree of motion to which the veteran must be limited. The board limited its consideration of the right shoulder to Mr. Estevez's abduction, failed to follow this court's holding in Mariano v. Principi and the Federal Circuit's holding in Yannick v. Shinseki, because Mr. Estevez's limitation of motion to 55 degrees is closer to 45 degrees than it is to 90 degrees. Mr. Estevez's disability picture most closely resembles that for which Diagnostic Code 5201 and 38 CFR 4.7 require a 30% evaluation. The Secretary's position in his brief improperly conflates the method by which 4.71 calls for rating flexion and abduction of the shoulder, the internal and external rotation of the shoulder. To use the Secretary's own metaphor here, it is the Secretary that is comparing apples to oranges. Plate 1 is a part of 4.71, and the interpretation of 5201 advanced by the Secretary would render 5201 incompatible with Plate 1 and thus 4.71. The Secretary argues that although 5201 lists only this one set of thresholds, it actually requires employing a different set of thresholds for, on the one hand, abduction and flexion, and, on the other hand, external and internal rotation. The implication the Secretary suggests is that 5201's degree thresholds for lost range of motion are, for the purposes of evaluating external and internal rotation, half of what the diagnostic code actually lists. For the Secretary's argument of having the diagnostic code's thresholds for limitation of rotation to work, either to 25 degrees or a 40% evaluation would need to become to 12.5 degrees, or else the listed 45-degree threshold for a 30% evaluation would need to become 22.5 degrees, less, that is, than what warrants a higher 40% evaluation. The first solution would change the diagnostic code's expressed language. The second solution would, at a minimum, yield an absurd result. The Secretary, in arguing the opposite, submitted Mr. Estevez's interpretation of 5201 would lead to a hypothetical situation in which a veteran with 0 degrees of internal or external rotation of the shoulder would only receive a 20% rating. But in arguing that, the Secretary is conflating the different planes of motion of the shoulder. Under the hypothetical the Secretary offers, the veteran would, under 5201, be entitled to the highest rating, a 40% rating, not a 20% rating, because the inability to rotate the shoulder would be 0 degrees range of internal rotation in that plane of motion. 5201 calls for a 40% rating for limitation of motion to 25 degrees. So 24 degrees down to 0 degrees, which was the Secretary's hypothetical, would warrant a 40% rating, not, as the Secretary suggested, a 20% rating. The board's error here was prejudicial, because as 4.7 requires, where there is a question as to which of two evaluations shall be applied, the higher evaluation will be assigned if the disability picture more nearly approximates the criteria required for that rating, the mathematical average of 90 degrees of the shoulder and 45 degrees midway between one side and one shoulder level is 67.5 degrees. Any limitation of motion of the major shoulder between 45 degrees and 67.5 degrees, including Mr. Estevez's 55 degrees, more nearly approximates the criteria for a 30% rating under or at worst for Mr. Estevez by analogy to Diagnostic Code 5201. Accordingly, on the correct interpretation of Diagnostic Code 5201, Mr. Estevez's limitation of his internal rotation of his major shoulder more nearly approximates the criteria for a 30% rating than it does the 20% rating, thus entitling him to a 30% rating. Because the error here is of regulatory interpretation and the facts permit only one conclusion, Mr. Estevez is entitled to a 30% rating. The appropriate remedy Mr. Estevez would submit to this court is reversal of the board's denial of a higher rating and remand to address the effective date. Lastly, turning to Mr. Estevez's...
Mr. Eiler, you're arguing that depending on the veteran's the limitation of motion, the kind of limitation of motion under 5201, that some veterans who that this would that different planes are actually contemplated in 5201. And so some veterans who are using a 180 degree, range of motion would actually get a lower evaluation than the shoulder rotation plane, which only allows for a 90, only allows 90 degrees of motion.
If I'm understanding Your Honor's question, I think, Your Honor, what we're saying is that it's clear 4.71 and plate 1 contemplate, and this court said, has previously said in its decision in the Mariano case, that the Secretary argued then, at that time, that...
wasn't Mariano only talking about... was it talking about abduction and extension or...
Flexion. Yes, flexion and abduction.
Flexion, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It did.
So
well,
it wasn't talking about the internal rotation.
No, well, I mean, our I would submit, Your Honor, that our reading of Mariano is that basically the court corrected the Secretary then, because the Secretary basically took the position that the other planes of motion would not be compensable. And we would submit that our reading of Mariano is the court clarifying to say, no, where you have functional loss, right, where you have limitation of motion of the in the according or corresponding plane of motion, you still need to compensate that veteran accordingly, proportionally, to how that would work under 5201. And as we had indicated in, or as the Federal Circuit has said, the veteran's not entitled to separate ratings for flexion and abduction, just one rating under 5201 for the degree to which they experience functional loss in the shoulder. So really what we're just, what Mr. Estevez is advocating here, Your Honor, is that it needs to be equal. It needs to apply equally, and it has to just be considered proportionally to the corresponding plane of motion.
Mr. Eiler, if the diagnostic code doesn't specifically address the internal shoulder rotation, can the court review and rate that abnormality?
No, Your Honor, but I don't believe that the court has to consider that as an option, because I still think it's the case that, I mean, as this court did in Mariano, it can utilize its ability to interpret what the code actually means as it applies to compensating veterans who experience internal and external range of motion.
You mean outside the rating schedule? I don't understand.
No, I guess I would submit, Your Honor, that I guess it's 7261, under 7261A1. I'm just going back to what the court previously held in Mariano. Basically, it said, look, we have the ability, it is under our jurisdiction to say what this diagnostic code entails. And we would submit that similarly, the court, that hasn't changed. The court is empowered to say how internal and external rotation have to be compensated based under what the functional loss is that they experience. If I'm answering Your Honor's question.
Thank you.
Finally, Your Honor, I see that my time has expired.
Let's add another 5 minutes, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just turning lastly to the last point, which is regarding Mr. Estevez's skin condition. Mr. Estevez would humbly submit the board's prejudicial error with respect to the rating of his skin condition was straightforward, confusing as it did, prescribed or used for what the diagnostic code actually calls for, which is that the condition require the treatment identified. Elsewhere in the schedule, symptoms can and do require a prescription. diagnostic codes 5012, 5243, both identify ratings that correspond to the care prescribed by a care provider. By contrast, 7806 merely identifies that the care is required, not that the care be either used or prescribed. This is also the case for obstructive sleep apnea in the M21, providing that the veteran requires the use of a breathing assistance device for a 50% rating, which rating doesn't contemplate the veteran actually use the mask, just that the mask is medically required. Mr. Estevez here was awarded 60% for a skin condition, but only from February 18, 2016. Nothing about the February 8, 2016 VA treatment record suggests that the date of the visit was the earliest date on which Mr. Estevez's skin condition required systemic therapy, and indeed the relevant records point to earlier dates. At that appointment, Mr. Estevez reported that he had seen a private dermatologist a month prior. He'd received steroid shots at the time. He'd also used spray medication during flare-ups and Lydex cream. These statements suggest the severity of symptoms that Mr. Estevez was experiencing did not suddenly get that severe on the date of the February 2016 consult. Given the diagnosis...
Mr. Eiler, is there evidence in the record prior to February 2016 that shows that his skin condition was constant or near constant?
Well, what we would submit, Your Honor, is that there was evidence of the severity of the condition in the record, which the board, in its capacity as the fact finder, didn't even address. And that's all we're saying here, is that the board needed to at least address the issue that Your Honor raises because of these other facts that are in the record that the board didn't address when determining that the veteran wasn't entitled to the an earlier effective date of the 60% rating.
Well, I was referring to the, I would call it not a severity requirement, but a frequency requirement, the constant or near constant, as opposed to what you seem to be referring to, which is more a severity. Did he require such and such kinds of therapy?
Right. I guess, Your Honor, the symptoms described by him as seeking out that treatment in February 2016 indicate that the same severity and chronicity of symptoms leading to the 60% rating effective February 2016 were present prior to that point. For both, we would submit. As far as
Mr. Eiler, I have a question on the skin condition. You're saying that it is a misinterpretation. You're saying he is required, that's the criteria, he's required to have this medication. Who makes that decision, especially prior to February 16th? Who would make that decision? The patient or...
We would submit, Your Honor, that the secretary can make clear whether or not they want it to be prescribed versus whether the severity is such that it's required. And if it's required, it may be that there's not a diagnosis given that would trigger that. But the symptoms could nevertheless, as we would submit that we're here, there's evidence that the manifestation of those symptoms at a point prior to the actual diagnosis. And that's where the board's error was in, despite those facts in the record, failing to discuss why that there wasn't an earlier effective date required. Your Honor, I see that my time has almost expired. I did just want to conclude. I think I may have, in response to Judge Lauer's question, indicated, I think I said 7216. Of course, it's 7261A1, and the court's traditional rules of regulatory construction to determine what the limitations of 5201 provide with respect to internal and external range of motion. And with that, Your Honor, if there are no other questions, I see here that
Judge Peach, do you have any further questions?
No, I don't.
Thank you.
Not this time. No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eiler. Mr. Joseph, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Court should affirm the July 23, 2024 decision and hold that appellant's rating for a meniscal disability under Diagnostic Code 5258 contemplates pain and all functional loss stemming from that pain to include painful motion. This approach is consistent with the Court's decision in Wallman versus McDonough evaluating distinct manifestations of a disability separately. Second, for the shoulder claim, we ask that the Court hold that the plain language of Diagnostic Code 5201 rates for limitation of motion of the arm based on abduction or flexion. And for the skin disability, the Board's finding that it did not require systemic treatment before February 8, 2016 is consistent with 38 CFR Section 4.118. Turning to the knee, appellant experiences pain due to his meniscal disability, and he receives a 20% under Diagnostic Code 5258, which contemplates dislocated semilunar cartilage with frequent episodes of walking, pain, and fusion into the joint. So this Diagnostic Code is not limited to pain after rest. The Diagnostic Code that contemplates pain necessarily contemplates the effects of that pain to include painful motion. So contrary to appellant's suggestion, the context or circumstances in which that pain might occur is irrelevant under the Diagnostic Code. Under Wallman versus McDonough, the Court held that the key consideration that excludes separate ratings is whether that rating is compensating the same manifestation or symptom. And the Court stressed that it does not rate individual symptoms, but rather distinct manifestations. And unlike in Wallman, where the veteran experienced lateral instability and other manifestations of the meniscectomy, appellant in this case seeks two ratings based on a single manifestation. Hey. Well, that pain name.
Mr. Joseph.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Joseph, we're having some bad echoes here. Is there some way you can improve your audio?
Let's see. Can you hear me? Can you hear me better if I'm closer?
It's hard to tell just from a few words, but maybe you could try to be a little closer.
Okay, I will. Yes. I will try.
Okay.
So unlike in Wallman, for example, where appellant experiences lateral instability and other manifestations of his meniscectomy, appellant seeks two ratings based on that single manifestation, which is pain. And that while that pain may impact appellant differently in various circumstances, such as walking or running, it remains a single manifestation for which he may be compensated only once, which is pain. And this is consistent with regulatory guidance and the Federal Circuit's discussions of 38 CFR Section 4.40 and 4.45. For example, in Thompson versus McDonald, explained that pain makes clear that functional loss may be due to pain, and that pain may render a part seriously disabled. And more recently in Saunders versus Wilkie, the Federal Circuit held that pain is a form of functional impairment and that pain is an impairment because it diminishes the body's ability to function. And in this case, appellant's limitation of motion is because of pain. And appellant, by compensating appellant twice for that pain, would violate the impairment. There needs to be something else, for example, like instability, as was the case in Wallman. Turning to the shoulder disability.
Mr. Joseph, I have a question regarding the knee. I noticed that according to the appellant's counsel, Mr. Esteban has an extension limited to 10%. So 5261 give you 10% for a limited extension of 10%. So why was not that considered in terms of maximizing all of the benefits to the appellant?
Your Honor, Looking at the 2016 examination, which noted appellant's 10 degrees of extension, that examiner indicated that the reason for that limitation of extension is pain. So there is no other factor contributing to that limitation of extension except for pain, and that pain is compensated under Diagnostic Code 5258.
But the DC doesn't say anything, 5261 DC doesn't say anything about pain. It just says limited extension limited to 10%.
And that's correct, Your Honor. However, as the court has discussed in its case law in Mitchell versus Shinseki and DeLuca versus Brown, in discussions of 4.0 and 4.45, there's a recognition that pain can cause functional loss and that pain can cause limitation of extension. So that is the key in this case, is that the reason for appellant's limitation of extension is pain. And that pain is contemplated under the frequent episodes of walking, pain, and effusion into the joint.
Mr. Joseph, Judge Peach, unless you have a follow-up question. Okay. Mr. Joseph, so this is where it gets a little confusing. I understand what you're saying about the limitation of motion diagnostic codes and the impact of DeLuca, et cetera. Now, let me just start off by asking you a question that I asked the appellant. What diagnostic code prior to May, I think it was 2013, what code he got an increase to 20%? And what code is he evaluated under now for that?
Your Honor, for that period, appellant was initially rated with a 10% under Diagnostic Code 5258, and then the board, applying DeLuca and consistent with the court's decision in Lyles, assigned a disability rating under 20%. Under, I believe it was Diagnostic Code 5261 or 5260.
Okay, and did the board decision change that, though, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and they granted a higher rating, applying the DeLuca factors to elevate appellant's rating to assign a rating of 20%.
Under DC?
5261, I believe.
Okay, and let me just check something here because I'm having trouble following what you're saying. So if you look on page 6 of the record, which is page 2 of the board decision, under conclusions of law. Point 2 there under conclusions of law says the criteria for 20% rating but no higher for left knee have been met prior to May 2013. And then it lists DC 5259 there. And I thought that appellant's counsel said that he got the bump up under 5258. So I'm not sure if it's my brain is screwed up or yours is.
No. Looking at the decision under, it's on page 16 of the record and page 12 of the board decision. When applying the DeLuca criteria, we found that the functional loss was 20% rating, and that a higher rating was not warranted under 5260 and 61. Then a separate ratings under 5258 or 5257 were not. That would, Yes, I apologize, Your Honor. That was diagnostic code 52-58.
Mr. Joseph, so he was granted under 52-58, even though the decision on page 2 says 52-59. And as you pointed out, the analysis under page on page 16 is quite confusing because it does mention DeLuca factors and sounds as though he's probably was granted the bump up under 52-60 or 61.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, appellants are.
You agree with appellant that he was granted the bump up under 52-58?
I would agree with appellant, Your Honor, and that is the argument that we responded to. Yes.
Okay.
The argument being that appellants. Oh, sorry, Your Honor.
No, I was just saying thank you.
Yes, and for that, the appellant's pain has been compensated for under during this period.
Mr. Joseph, let me interrupt you again. So you were saying in answer to Judge Peach's question that. She said, look, this exam shows that he had sufficient limitation of motion to get a 10%. And you said, well, that was based on DeLuca, that it's not a straight, like, classic, prior to DeLuca, kind of classic rating schedule increase under the diagnostic code. They had to apply DeLuca in order to get him to the 10% in order to assess that particular range of motion. Now, where can we find that in the record? Is there somewhere that said that?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is in the October. That is in the October 2016 examination. I want to say it's at record at 1182.
I have it here. Can you just point out in what part of this form that it says that he meets the criteria? The limitation of motion criteria because of pain. Where are you getting that? And that, I guess the reverse is that he wouldn't, unless they considered pain, he wouldn't meet the limitation of motion criteria. Does it say that anywhere?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. You are asking about the where in the VA examination or where in the rating?
Where on page 1182 are you finding mention of DeLuca and pain?
Oh, sorry, Your Honor. There's a question on 1182. Does pain, weakness, fatigability, and the examiner answers yes. And the factor that causes appellant's functional loss is pain. And again, sorry, on 1181 as well. So the examiner does note pain on examination and causes functional loss. So really, the only indication of appellant's or why appellant has limited motion is because of pain. And again, on 1184, additional factors contributing to disability, the examiner indicates pain.
So you're talking about the bottom of the form there on page 1182?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no further questions.
Mr. Joseph, I'm sorry, I did think of another question. What you just pointed to on record 1182, can we find that in a rating decision anywhere? Why he was awarded a 10% for a little while Can we find that in a rating decision? That is, the doctor indicates that this limitation of motion was based on pain. Was that made clear in any adjudicatory decision?
Your Honor, in the current board decision, the board does find that appellant's functional loss to include painful motion is contemplated by his current rating, 20% rating under Diagnostic Code 5258. I believe that's at page 18 of the board decision. So when considering appellants, whether repetitive motion or flare-ups resulted in additional functional loss, that was already contemplated by his assigned rating. Again, and that is attestation of.
Is that in a regional office decision as well or no?
During the current appeal period, so that the RA would have issued a supplemental statement of the case following that examination.
And does that supplemental statement of the case contain the mention of that this VAE from 2016 showed that he was entitled to a 10% based on the DeLuca factors?
Your Honor, I apologize if I'm misunderstanding. So prior to May 2013, he was awarded a 10%, and then the board increased that rating to effective to May 2013, and from that date forward, appellant has always received a 20% rating based on episodes of locking pain and effusion into the joint. Does that clarify the procedural history?
Well, I mean, Judge Peach's question was, how come he's not entitled to another 10% based on limitation of motion? And your response to her was, well, that limitation of motion was not like, it was based on pain and on DeLuca factors. And I'm just trying to find out did an adjudicator actually hold that, or is that
Sorry, Your Honor. Yeah, that's from the board's discussion on record at 18 of the record, where the board contemplates appellant's functional loss to include pain on motion and finds it contemplated by the 20% rating under Diagnostic Code 5258 because it contemplates episodes of pain.
Okay, thank you. So your answer is the board decided that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And turning to the shoulder, the court should reject appellant's invitation to revise the rating criteria in Diagnostic Code 5201 to include rating based on internal and external rotation. Instead, it's based on flexion, which is kind of raising the arm forward, and abduction, which is raising the arm from the side. And Diagnostic Code 5201 provides three levels of disability based on the angle to which the veteran can raise his arm from the side, and beginning with the highest rating, that's 25 degrees from the side, midway between the side and shoulder level, and at shoulder level, which provides a 20%, which appellant currently receives. And flexion and abduction is measured from 0 to 180 degrees, beginning at the side. And given the discussion in Diagnostic Code 5201 of providing ratings referencing the side, that is the only logical way to rate under Diagnostic Code 5201. Rotation is an exception to how to how an abduction or measure. And to measure rotations, Section 4.41 instructs a veteran to first abduct his arm to 90 degrees. So at that point, his arm is at shoulder level, and the only rating he could receive would be a 20%. And then once you've abducted to 90 degrees, you flex the elbow to 90 degrees, and then the position of the forearm becomes the 0% midpoint rather than the side. And so, external rotation would go this way, and internal rotation would kind of be putting the arm down with the midpoint at 0 degrees. But the midpoint always remains at shoulder level. So the rating criteria really don't make sense if it were based on shoulder rotation. And instead, a plain reading of the criteria indicates that it's based on the angle to which the veteran can raise his arm in a vertical plane. Again, as a practical matter, it's unclear how you would measure 25 degrees from the side when it is basically measured at the elbow with your arm positioned at the shoulder level. And appellant's references to 38 CFR, the diagrams in 38 CFR section 4.71, those serve only to provide a standardized description of joint measurements, those diagrams do not prescribe standards for entitlement to benefits or ratings.
Mr. Joseph, is there a diagnostic code? Then you're saying basically that this deficit in internal shoulder rotation that he has is not properly evaluated under 5201. So is there a diagnostic code that does evaluate that kind of disability? Because it doesn't seem to be a catch-all diagnostic code like there is for some body parts.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, the shoulder is rated. Appellant may receive one rating under diagnostic code 5201, and that's provided by the Federal Circuit in Yannick. But that measurement of internal and external rotation is relevant for applying other diagnostic codes. For example, diagnostic code 5202, the 30% criteria in that diagnostic code provides for recurrent dislocation of the scapulohumeral joint. That requires guarding of all arm movements, so that would seem to include internal and external rotation as well as flexion and abduction. And the muscular criterion 4.73 also referenced groups of muscles that affect rotation of the scapula. For example, diagnostic code 5304 references outward and inward rotation of the arm. And 5302 references downward rotation of the scapula.
And so the Secretary's position is that when there's that and internal shoulder rotation deficit is only relevant with regard to other disabilities of the shoulder, but not for a straight, like, range of motion evaluation for internal shoulder rotation.
Yes, Your Honor. And, again, this is supported by the current version of 38 CFR Section 4.71A, which went into effect in February 2021, where SBA clarified in the proposed rule to revise the musculoskeletal criteria. It clarified that this limitation of motion is based only on abduction and flexion, and it specifically noted that this is not a change but a clarification. And notably, Your Honor, the Court of Mariano versus Principi declined to interpret Diagnostic Code 5201 in the first instance and demanded for the Secretary to clarify the questions presented by his regulation. And so now, with the benefit of this clarified rule, the Secretary has explained how he evaluates limitation of motion of the arm, which would lead to consistent application of the diagnostic code. And again, in Yannick, versus Shinseki, there's no mention whatsoever of internal or external rotation. Instead, the only issue there was whether appellant could receive it, receive a rating for both flexion and abduction. So internal or external rotation simply isn't discussed. So turning to the, if there are no further questions regarding the shoulder, turning to skin. Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Joseph, just concerning the shoulder again, I want to jump back. So you were saying that the secretary, I guess in the final rule, said that this wasn't a substantive change, but didn't he in the proposed rule indicate that this was, the change to 5201 was a substantive change?
No, respectfully, no, Your Honor. They indicated in the proposed rule that this is only a clarification and not a change.
Earlier in the, I believe it's somewhere in the text of the proposed, he called it a substantive change.
Your Honor, I know I have that cited, the portion cited in my brief. Federal Register at 35, 35722, they were not intended to alter the rating criteria, but to simply clarify the specific ranges of motion that qualify as limitations to ensure rating personnel consistently apply these criteria. And so that's from the July 2017. That's the language in that change to the Federal Register in the proposed rule. So that, again, which, again, is consistent with how VA has interpreted the rating schedule.
I believe that if you look in the text further, you'll see that it's called a substantive revision. But we can move on.
Your Honor, turning to the skin, the board found that before February 8th, 2016, the evidence weighed against finding that appellant's skin disability required, the evidence weighed against finding that appellant's skin disability required systemic therapy before February 8th, 2016. So the board uses the correct terminology in 38 CFR section 4.118. They do not use the term prescribed or used. And that day, appellant was started on 2 milligrams of hydroxyzine for treatment of his lichen planus. And that's the earliest evidence that appellant was started on systemic treatment by a dermatologist. And so that's a plausible date for the effectiveness of a 60% rating. And whether systemic therapy is required for a skin condition is a medical determination to be made by a physician. And a medical examiner is the only person competent to make that determination. And a current suggestion that he may have needed it earlier is speculative and unsupported medical evidence. So, again, contrary to the suggestion, the board did not draw these distinctions between required, prescribed, received, and applied the proper language in the regulation, which is required. So, concluding, we ask that the court hold that pain and painful motion are a single manifestation of appellant's left knee disability, and that rating for limitation of motion of the arm under Diagnostic Code 5201 is based on flexion and abduction, and that the board did not clearly err in finding that appellant's skin disability did not require systemic treatment before February 8, 2016. And we ask that the court affirm those parts of the board decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph. And Mr. Eiler?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm prepared to proceed with rebuttal at this time.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The Secretary's argument with respect to the issue of compensation for Mr. Estevez's knee condition, pain is pain, does not differentiate among different kinds of pain or in what circumstances that pain occurs. Secretary's position that assigning separate compensable rating evaluations under the two diagnostic codes, 5258 and 5261, would compensate Mr. Estevez twice for the same disability in violation of the rule against pyramiding fails to acknowledge that the schedule differentiates among different kinds of pain, including based on the circumstances in which that pain occurs. The argument overlooks that the schedule's rating criteria, as identified by 38 CFR 4.7, are by their nature minimum requirements. Holding that, as the Secretary just has, that 5258 soaks up all of Mr. Estevez's knee pain, inserting the word all into the as a modifier up to the type of pain that 5258 contemplates, would destroy that proportionality and require reading words or elements into the regulation, namely the word all, to the type of pain that isn't present. Moreover, doing so flips the Secretary's duty to maximize Mr. Estevez's benefits on its head. The court should reject the Secretary's defense of the board's disregard of a possible 10% rating under 5261, and it only considering whether his entitlement under the same diagnostic code exceeded 20%. Mr. Estevez's limited knee extension and the meniscal disability are separate, non-overlapping disabilities, and accordingly must, under 38 CFR 4.25, be rated separately, and the board erred in analyzing whether Mr. Estevez qualifies for a 30% rating only under one or the other diagnostic code. With respect to the Secretary's arguments with respect to the shoulder condition, Your Honor, Mr. Estevez would maintain that even if it is simply by analogy, and that may be what's appropriate here with respect to diagnostic code 5201, at a minimum, what we would submit is that it is not the case, as the Secretary just argued, that plate one is not a part of the Secretary's schedule for ratings disabilities, because it depicts an entire range of motion that the Secretary has to adequately compensate veterans for the functional loss that they experience in that sphere of motion. The Secretary's argument that the February 2021 version of the rule informs the prior version is, as we argued in our brief, impermissible post hoc rationalization. And it has no effect in this case because the new rule lacks retroactivity and is not more liberal than this court's binding precedent in Mariano as to the interpretation of 5201. Any clarification would involve the pre-February 7, 2021 version informing the current diagnostic code, not the other way around. Adding flexion or abduction to the diagnostic code specifically, if it had any effect at all, as Your Honor indicated, with no mere clarification, it was substantive. Narrowing the scope of the rating evaluation, or at least the threshold for many of the four planes of motion only to flexion and or abduction. But as it is no more liberal than the version in effect when the board decided, it is a post hoc rationalization that the court should not consider. The panel of this court in Mariano held that 5201 could not, as the Secretary argued at the time, be limited just to abduction, but rather 5201 had to consider the limitations of the different planes of motion of the shoulder. While Mr. Estevez maintains that the appropriate remedy here would be reversal in light of the facts already in the record, if the court disagrees that it cannot go that far, to vacate and remand with respect to the shoulder would also be appropriate. As far as the skin condition, the Secretary said, that the Secretary well knows how to use or make it necessary that the treatment be prescribed, because the Secretary has done so for other conditions. But that's not the case here, Your Honor. It was just simply necessary that the condition be required. And with that, Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I see that my time has expired, and I would conclude my rebuttal.
Judge Peach, do you have any further questions?
I do not.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Eiler, and the court thanks both parties, and the case is submitted for consideration.
All right.
The court is adjourned.